Hey, welcome to the first episode of The Creative Classroom, where our goal is to make sense out of the creative process and what that means for students. Pretty simple. Today's episode, 10 ways to leverage student choice in your classroom. It's the first in a series on this concept of student choice. My kids participate in an amazing hands-on learning experience every single summer. It's called Home. It's where they write stories, paint pictures, go on expeditions, visit parks, read books, and build things with duct tape and cardboard. For the entire summer, they own the learning process. There are no tests, no benchmarks, no curriculum maps, and no bell schedules. It is an educational anarchy where they tear down the walls between ideas and subjects, and they just simply make and tinker and explore and read and curate the learning on their own terms. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not perfect. Just yesterday, they were at each other's throats over what I would call creative differences. They have had moments where they complained about boredom, only to discover minutes later that boredom actually leads to creative breakthroughs. They have had days where they walked away from a project in frustration and started to binge watch something on Netflix. In other words, they're not that different from me and you. And yet, they are developing into lifelong learners. They are already viewing themselves as geeks who can figure out anything over time. They pursue creative work with a passion that's almost contagious. Yes, that passion sometimes leads to heated arguments. And our home vacillates between looking like Phineas and Ferb and VH1 Behind the Music. But most of the time, it leads to a state of creative flow where they are lost in their work. Most of the time, it kind of looks like Phineas and Ferb. So in a little over a month, they will return to school with the bell schedule and the benchmark tests and the prep packets and everything else that goes with it. And while I realize that schools cannot operate under the educational anarchy that is called summer, I can't help but wonder what it would be like to empower students with more choice and agency in their learning at all times, year round. Student choice is more than simply choosing a topic. It is about empowering students through the entire learning process. This is especially true in classrooms that embrace creativity, design thinking, and project-based learning. So, what does that actually look like? I mean, how do we actually pull this off in a classroom? And here are 10 different ways to incorporate student choice into the classroom. Number one, let the students choose the topic. When I first had students blog, I would post a writing prompt on the projector. However, when I had students explore real blogs, they pointed out to me that outside of school, bloggers wrote about topics they cared about. They didn't write according to a writing prompt. That wasn't at all what their process looked like. So we began to change things, and eventually they began to choose their own topic or themes for their blog, and they would create foodie blogs, sports blogs, gamer blogs, fashion blogs, whatever. Whatever they were into became the source of their inspiration. They got to choose the topic. Number two, let students ask questions. See, I believe that students should question answers as often as they answer questions. This is why inquiry is such a critical component of things like design thinking. And students need to move from awareness to curiosity in a way that will fuel their creative thinking. And the way to do it is to let them ask their own questions. I was talking to my friend Michelle Baldwin about this, and her students ask amazing questions all the time. And I said, how is it that you get them to ask such great questions? And she said, well, they get to choose the questions they ask. And I said, yeah, but I mean, how did they lead into that place? And she said, the biggest barrier to great questions isn't that they don't know how to ask them, but that they're afraid to ask them. They're afraid of a question being off task or sounding stupid, so they don't ask questions. They just quit doing that. I was talking to somebody today, and he was sharing a similar process It was this guy, Glenn Warren, in California. And he was describing the fact that they worked with fourth graders and first graders, and the first graders generated so many questions that the teacher couldn't keep up with it. But then the fourth graders had very few questions. Now, this is in an open question brainstorm time. And when he brought this up to the teacher responded that maybe it's because when you're older, you know more, so you don't need to ask as many questions. But I don't buy into that. To me, the more you know, the more curious you should be. The more you know, the more into it you should be. The more you know, the more questions you should have. You don't see a cosmologist who knows everything about the universe just saying, oh, I know everything about the universe, because they know that that's not true. There's so many unanswered questions. They have tons of questions at all times. Number three, let students decide the content. See, I love sustained silent reading. I get it. It's old school. It won't make the list of trendy new makerspace learning activities. It's not going to be in a book, whatever. But it works. A few years ago, I taught 8th grade self-contained. The school librarian and the upper grade teachers had cultivated this love of silent reading. And the truth is, it was amazing. When we went to the library, it was like going to the candy store. It was something truly different that I had never seen in school before. I almost felt like I was being punked at first. Like, kids were pretending to be that excited about the library, but they weren't pretending. They were genuinely that excited to be there. Number four, let students pick the materials and the resources. In design thinking, students work through an ideation phase and then they begin to build a prototype. I love the idea that they guide not only the concept of what they will create, but also they figure out what materials and resources they need to use in order to build this prototype. And this goes beyond just physical products. In digital content, they can choose what apps to use and what types of media that they're going to work with. When designing an event or a service project, they can determine the venue, the materials, and the human resources that need to be involved. So, in other words, they own this process of choosing the materials and the resources. Number five, let students choose the strategies. When I think of the most tedious things kids experience in school, there's a high likelihood that they don't get a chance to choose the strategies. Take close reading, for example. The rigid approach will say something like, you know, use these symbols and follow this recipe. And kids are looking at it and they're studying it and they're focused on that. And they're so focused on doing this process the, quote, right way that they fail to make sense out of the actual text. They forget why they're doing what they do. But if you treat the strategies as something that they can play with, as something malleable, they become a lot less risk-averse. They become much more likely to dive in and actually use that. Number six, let students choose the scaffolding. I remember requiring students to use a set of scaffolding in the research process. A handful of students loved it because they needed it. It was necessary for them. But the rest of the students viewed the scaffolding like a cage. This thing that I had built for them began to entrap them, and they hated it. I should have treated the scaffolding as an optional resource that they could use and they could own and they could access whenever they found it necessary. Number seven, let students choose the format. When possible, allow students to choose the formats for their creative work. It might be a video, a podcast, a blog post, something physical and hands-on. The point is, letting them choose the format empowers them and gives them the sense of ownership over the process. Number eight, let students choose the audience. I've written this about this before, but I really believe that students should choose the audience. When they're able to do that, they can clarify what they are doing and why they are doing that. This honors their sense of agency. See, I think it's powerful to publish, for example, to a global audience, but not every student wants to do that at every time. And when we say to them, I want you to find a real audience and you get to define what's real, that becomes something transferable. That becomes something they can use outside of the immediate context. Number nine, let students choose the groups. this is the most controversial, and I know I'm going to get some flack for it, but people will point out that in the real world, you don't always get to choose your groups. I get that, right? We're stuck with who we have to work with, whatever. But when you work on a really cool voluntary collaborative project outside of your work, you often get to choose your groups. In my experience, our most functional groups in class were the ones where students worked with their friends. At first, they were too social, and this could be a little bit of a classroom management challenge. But then the challenge and the excitement of the tasks began to kick in. They were able to tap into their mutual trust for one another and go deeper in their work than they would have with strangers. While this might not be necessary for every single project, it is something teachers might want to consider. Maybe you should let them choose their groups. A little caveat here. If you have students who are being socially excluded, please figure that out ahead of time. Please find ways to make sure that that student is connected to a group and in a way that doesn't feel like a chore to the members who are in that group. Number 10, let students manage the projects. This was by far the hardest thing for me to let go of. In a project-based design thinking classroom, I wanted to manage the projects. I wanted to be in charge. I wanted to know that they were on track. I felt responsible for it. But I was doing that for them. They could have been monitoring the progress on their own. See, I now believe that project management is a powerful transferable skill that they're going to use outside of the classroom. Students need to own this process. They need to learn the art of project management. Over time, I've seen how allowing them to own this project management piece and build systems on their own that monitor the progress end up empowering them to become actual project managers, and they become more self-directed in the process. So, should students choose everything? For all the talk about the guide on the side and the teacher, you know, not being the sage on stage, the truth is that guides are, well, still guides. Even in a student-centered classroom, the teacher is still the expert. There are times when limiting choices actually increases creative thinking. Students work within the constraints to find solutions that push divergent thinking. Moreover, there are times when students don't have as much prior knowledge in a certain content area, and you, as the teacher, have to expose them to new ideas, approaches, resources, and content that they might have otherwise ignored. In other words, you're not allowing them to just go on their own at all times. You are still there. And as a guide, you are often doing exactly that, guiding. But when we incorporate student choice, they own the learning process. I keep saying that over and over again, but that's critical. We honor their agency and empower them to become the lifelong learners that we're always talking about wanting them to be. At some point, they will leave your classroom, and they won't have a guide on their side right there. They will have to take charge and make decisions about their own learning. And this is why student choice is so critical. If they know how to own this, if they have this sense of direction on their own, they won't need you. And that's going to be a good thing.